This week, we'll look back at highlights from AFGE's Midwest Regional Training with AFGE USDA National Meat Graders Council 200 Treasurer Heather Lewis and DOD Air National Guard Local 2955 member Bill Austin. And later, AFGE Field Mobilization Director Tucker McDonald will detail the union's field plan to fight sequestration. But first, we've been joined by AFGE Department of Veterans Affairs Local 390 President Matthew Hokanson. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
You, of course, represent VA workers in Minnesota. Tell me about some of the challenges that your members face on the work site.
Certainly. We happen to represent a large number of nurses at our St. Cloud VA hospital. The biggest issue we're facing right now is a staffing shortage. We do not have enough nurses to complete the cares for our patients that we would like to. The facility has what they call a staffing methodology that determines what they think we should get, but unfortunately what we're seeing is they don't really understand the reality and the complexity of the duties and cares that are needed.
So it's essentially a situation where a formula is made to staff the facility, although maybe what's actually happening inside the facility isn't taken into account?
That's correct. What they try to do is establish minimum staffing levels based on what they think each floor should need. And unfortunately, that doesn't take into account a lot of the work that's being done, and it leaves us shorthanded. What we're seeing is a lot of the more skilled RNs are doing a lot of paperwork, a lot of computer work, and that leaves the LPNs and the nursing assistants to do the rest of the cares. And unfortunately, we don't have enough LPNs and nursing assistants to go around and actually complete all those cares.
So talk to me a little bit about the consequences of that formula taking place, where RNs who would normally be caring for patients are now doing computer work, administrative work, etc.
So what we're seeing is that the LPNs and the nursing assistants are really having to prioritize and get the most important cares done, and that leaves a lot of quality of life things not being done. So veterans aren't getting up out of their beds. They're not being taken to the activities. They're not doing the things that you and I take for granted as real quality of life issues. And primarily with our older folks in extended care, that's what they're there for, is we're there to provide them a quality of life that they would not otherwise be getting. And those things are the things that are being lost in all of this.
And are some of those activities that you mentioned that weren't getting done, are they part of the healing process for the veteran?
Without a doubt. They most certainly are part of the palliative care process. We claim to be a patient-centered organization. Unfortunately, those patients are often forgot about in the name of bureaucracy and money.
So clearly here we have a situation where some of these methodologies that are in place are ultimately impacting patient care.
Unfortunately, most of the decisions that come out of Washington directly or indirectly affect our patients in some manner, and not always in a good way.
So how long has this been going on?
I would say that this has been a big issue for the last 2 or 3 years primarily. We've been shifting our nurses away from the areas where they should be. Hands-on patient care is what we should be about, and unfortunately we're getting our nurses caught up into a lot of administrative and other tasks that they otherwise would not be doing.
So as a local president then representing these workers, what are you able to do to help them?
So what I do is I advocate on behalf of not only the staff, but the veterans that we serve. So we go to management, we go to our facility director, our nurse executive, and say, listen, this is what we're seeing, this is what our folks are seeing. You need to hire more LPNs, you need more nursing assistants, you need more people doing direct hands-on care for these veterans that we serve, because ultimately that's why we're here, and that's why people come to work at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
And what kind of response do you get for those requests?
Typically what we hear is they give out the mantra of staffing methodology, that we're staffing based on what we think we need. And unfortunately, what we see as management is hopelessly out of touch with the people that are on the ground providing patient care. So we encourage them to come and see what they do, to see how complex it is, to see how difficult it is, and support them when they need it. And they need it quite badly right now.
And ultimately, what we're talking about is caring for our nation's veterans who have ensured us the freedoms that we take advantage of today.
These are the men and women that have sacrificed years and years. Some have sacrificed their limbs. Some have sacrificed their lives. We owe it to them to give them everything that they could possibly want in the later years of life. It's the least we can do for them.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Matthew Hokanson, the president of AFGE's VA Local 390 out of St. Cloud, Minnesota. Matthew, talk to me about interactions that you have with veterans who are under the care in the facility and some of the things that they tell you about their experiences.
I've been very fortunate. I've worked in mental health at the VA for about 7.5 years. I was in our dual diagnosis unit. And the veterans that I helped care for were very appreciative of the work we did. They felt it was a very safe place for them to come and, you know, try to get away from drugs and alcohol, to try to fix their mental health issues, which is a very difficult thing to do. And they were so easy to care for. It was the main reason that I stayed for so long, because they're such an appreciative group of men and women.
One of the things that President Cox has said to us on this program many times is the things that a person in combat sees, they're not the types of things that the human brain is necessarily equipped to deal with. Can you talk to me about some of the challenges that those men and women face after they come back from combat, trying to reintegrate themselves into day-to-day life?
That's exactly the problem we're seeing, especially with the younger veterans coming back from OEF, OIF. They're very good at training soldiers how to go into combat, how to fight. The problem is these folks aren't being prepared to turn that off and come back home and go back into civilian life. And what we're seeing is a real lack of ability to cope. We're seeing an increase in anger issues. We're seeing problems in relationships, problems with jobs. Maintaining employment is very difficult when you're suffering from PTSD or anxiety or depression.
And of course, at a time when jobs really are at a premium in this country, people are out of work and they're looking to find something to sustain themselves.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things the VA should be focusing on, is helping these folks when they come back, finding them gainful employment, finding them housing. We are not doing enough to support the people that are out there dying and fighting for us.
And you would think that everyone's mission, no matter what side they fall on, is to serve the veterans. But do you think that there are some things here that the agency can do to better position themselves to fulfill that mission?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the important things they need to do is fix the process of the claims process itself. We see that there's a tremendous backlog in veterans applying for service-connected disabilities. It's taking sometimes up to 2 years for these folks to get a decision so that they can get the monetary support that they deserve.
Going forward, as someone who's representing these members in Local 390, what are the top couple of issues that you're focused on through the rest of this year?
The biggest issues we have, as you know, Jason, we've been in a pay freeze for almost 3 years now. Even despite that fact, federal employees still stay at the VA because of the mission, because of the veteran. A number of our employees are veterans. They know what it's like to fight for their country, but it's demoralizing. At the same time, the message we're getting from Washington is, you just don't matter to us enough for us to give you a pay raise. And most of us are folks that are, you know, GS-5s, GS-6s, making $35,000, $40,000 a year. We don't make a six-figure salary. We don't have a Cadillac pension. We're asking just that you support us so that we can support the veterans that we serve.
Do you think that's one of the biggest challenges that you face, is changing that misperception of who federal employees are and what they do?
I think we've become a very convenient target, not only for politicians, but for news organizations. It's a very clever soundbite when we hear that federal employees are overpaid and underworked, and that's absolutely not true. What I see are nurses that come in, and it's all they can do just to get the work they need to get done in 8 hours, and yet they continue to show up day after day taking care of these folks that they love.
Talk to me about your concerns of patient care issues for nurses, people working with the veterans who are overworked in an agency that's understaffed with mandatory overtimes. Talk to me about that relationship there.
It's a very scary situation, because nurses are the most vital component in a healthcare organization. They are the ones that day-to-day monitor that veteran and his or her needs. And if they're overworked, if they don't get regular days off, if they're not getting vacations like they should, these folks tend to burn out, and that's where bad decisions are made, unfortunately. So you put them in a very compromising situation. You're dealing with veterans that are acutely ill on multiple medications, and you're asking this person to make sound judgments day after day, regardless of their work situation, and that's just not right.
And probably not reasonable to expect someone to make the same decision within the first hour or two of work that they would make in the 14th, 15th, or 16th hour of work, right?
Absolutely, and studies support that increasingly the longer that nurses work, typically, especially as you get into the evening hours, the more compromised their decision-making becomes. And when you're dealing with veterans that are highly complex, that's a recipe ultimately for disaster.
Talk to me about what brought you to the labor movement as a local leader.
I was fortunate enough to grow up in a household, International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. My father was a business representative for many years. So for me, it's really in my blood. Organized labor to me is what this country was built upon. They're the ones that gave us the 40-hour work week. They're the ones that gave us pensions, health care, safe working environments. They're the ones that have kept the middle class going. And unfortunately, we're seen as something that's now stifling the middle class when nothing could be further from the truth. That's our mission in life, is to support working Americans.
If you were able to speak to your members directly now and every one of the employees at the VA, what message would you have for them?
I would think we're at a critical juncture in the organized labor movement. People need to speak up and be recognized. They can no longer be complacent and accept what comes at them. They have to let their voice be heard. They have to hound their politicians day after day, as long as it takes, to let them know that we're not going to tolerate this anymore, that we're actually the ones that decide the fate of this country, and we're the ones that they should be listening to, not the special interests, not the lobbyists.
Matthew Hokanson, the president of AFGE's VA Local 390 out of St. Cloud, Minnesota. Matthew, thank you so much for your time today.
Appreciate it, Jason. Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue from AFGE's Midwest Regional Training with USDA National Meat Graders Council 200 Treasurer Heather Lewis.